once you have that expectation of, hey, this is the due date and we're always going to deliver, or it could be even with a team member, hey, I'm going to do X, you always have to do it.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand.life show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand.live show. It's Ben Baker, and thank you for being such a wonderful audience week after week. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for your social media posts. Thank you guys for giving me your ideas about what you like and what you don't like. I love that you're there every single week. This week, I have Spencer Shaw from Podkick, and let's talk about how to run a successful service-based business remotely. Spencer, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, you are the gypsy CEO.
I like that phrase. That's pretty interesting.
I think we're going to get you a bandana. We're going to get you some tambourines or something like that. Because every time I talk to you, you are somewhere else in the world. Full disclosure, you just came back from how long in Mexico?
I was there for several months and then other parts of the world before that. So it was good.
It's amazing. And let's start off. Let's back up a minute. Let's give people a little idea about who you are. What is Podkick? What type of business are you? And then let's get into, because being able to run a service-based business successfully remotely is, there's challenges and there's amazing, you know, opportunities in doing this. But let's let people find out a little bit more about you and then let's get into this.
Sure, that'd be great. A bit of my background. I've been an entrepreneur my entire business career. I've never had a corporate job. So I don't understand the corporate world from the employee's side of things. But as far as business, what I've done, I had a restaurant early on in my career. I ran that for several years and then sold that company. I had a real estate investment firm. I've got a publishing company, a software company. I've done a lot of different things. And it's just because it's things that I enjoy. I've been fortunate enough to have a few exits. I've had a lot of failures. And I've had a few that are still hanging in and having fun with.
If we didn't have our failures, we wouldn't have our successes. I always look at it and sit there and say, if I'm not failing every once in a while, I'm not pushing hard enough.
Oh, yeah.
And I look at it and say, every entrepreneur that, you know, just tells me that everything is hunky-dory and that everything is successful, I think is probably playing it too safe.
Yeah, that's a really good assessment.
So let's get into this. Let's get into the fact that your business right now, you guys help run podcasts for the legal industry and a couple of different other industries. So tell me a little bit more about what are the services that you provide your customers today in terms of the podcast industry. And then let's talk about the fact that your employees are across the state, across the country, internationally, and you travel on a regular basis. And let's get into the challenges and opportunities of being able to run a company that way.
Sure, absolutely. To unpack and first set the stage of what we do, we are a podcast production company and a podcast network. So there's two sides to that. The production side is that we produce podcasts for specific industries. So we only do B2B stuff. And we don't do anything in the entertainment or comedy industry. There's specific reasons why we don't go in there. We may get to it. But we've focused a lot on industries that we know we can make a significant impact. And what it looks like for our customers is that they have a conversation, could be internally, or it can be them interviewing guests. And then they send us an audio or video file. And then from there, we run with it. And our team has developed a pretty solid process that we go through and we edit the audio and video, and we write a summary of the episodes, create custom artwork and lots of bells and whistles, and then syndicate the shows. And that, from the client side, they look at it and they go, this is cool. I just recorded something and upload, and then I forget about it. It's a lot of moving parts and pieces for us. And then on the network side, we own shows and we grow those shows. So we've been very intentional at specific tasks or things that we'll do and then things that we won't do. And I think that's where many service-based businesses can get off track. You start to get some success or revenue, and then a client will ask you, they like that you've delivered on time. And then they'll say, oh, by the way, can you also do this? Can you also do this? And that's where a lot of service businesses go foul, because they get spread too thin. And so we've made sure not to do that. And I'm not saying we did that perfectly, because as we did grow, we said, oh, maybe we'll try this. And realize, no, either the metrics, the revenue margins aren't good enough, or the headaches are too much that we're just like, no, we're not going to do that. So that's our business there.
It's important because you found your wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. This is what we do. We work with B2B companies and we work with them these two different ways. And I think that's really good, because when you do that, you can build the systems and processes that you need to be able to do. I remember when I first started this podcast 4 years ago, I did everything myself. I found the guests, I recorded it, I edited it, I did the show notes, we uploaded it, made sure that it went out on the RSS feed, made sure that Spotify, iHeart, and all those people got the materials, made sure that the graphics were done, the social media, and it got to be a lot. It truly did. It got to be a lot when you sit there and go, you're putting out a show a week. And it is. It's every Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, the show is out. And if you're just sitting there going, okay, I'm just going to, okay, maybe I have to find the guests and record it, that's doable in a week. If all of a sudden you're having to do everything else that goes with it, you can run it afoul and all of a sudden you run out of time because you're trying to run a business while you're doing your podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So relying on companies like yours to be able to take over and do what you do well makes things far easier for anybody in the podcasting industry. I'd recommend every single podcaster, when you're first starting out, do it yourself. Do it yourself for 6 months. Understand what it takes. Understand where the challenges are. Understand what the timelines are. Understand what needs to be done. And then move over to a service, because then you can talk intelligently to the service and say, this is what I want. And you have realistic expectations about what can be done, what can't be done, what you would like to have done, and be able to work with them to be able to make sure that things happen in a more elevated way. But I think it's so important to, first of all, stay in your wheelhouse, and second of all, realize that there are people out there that do things better than you do in certain areas, and either rely on them or refer work to them at whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's an advisor, coach, someone, a guy named Dan Sullivan. He's got a company called Strategic Coach, and he uses the phrase who, not how. And I think too often people get stuck where they're trying to figure out how to do everything. And it's good to have a base knowledge and an understanding to be able to have conversation with a technical expert at a basic level is great. But do I need to know how to program everything in Python and what all the bits and pieces are? We also, to give context, we're not just a podcasting company, we're a technology company, because I have that software background. We've developed our own artificial intelligence that runs with our company. And I know enough language to have communication, and that's about it. But I'm not a developer.
Enough to be dangerous. Just like, yeah, I can sit there and talk to the techie guys and sit there going, this is what I'd like. And I understand when they say we can't do this because of this, but to sit down there and code, I'm 25 years away from my best coding days. I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. It really is.
Let's get into the fact that, okay, you have a company with a lot of moving parts. You have editors, you have graphic designers, you have people that you'll handle social media. You have a PR team. You say you have a tech team. Obviously that these people are all over the place. You readily admit you have a home office. There is a mothership, but it's a mothership that's in a shared space, and people can use it as they want. But most of your staff works remotely. It has worked for your team, and it's worked for you guys for years. This is not a COVID experience. This is something you've been doing for years, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, this entire company has been virtual. We have met as an entire team a couple of times for video shoots and photo shoots. We hired a videography team to come and interview us and create our typical like corporate type of stuff. That's when we meet. That's it. And in the past, I've met other team members outside the country. We flew down to Colombia to meet up with team members, and we flew them in so we could all enjoy and have a fun time, a vacation mixed with work. It was great.
So when you take that into consideration, the fact that you guys were remote from day one, you built a purposely remote company. What was the impetus to do that right away? What was the thought process when you were starting this company from scratch? You know, to say, I want my company to be X and this is why.
Yeah. So the reason why is I had brick and mortar businesses before. So that was in my early 20s. I had brick and mortar businesses, late 20s, still had brick and mortar. I owned a real estate brokerage and then a real estate investment firm. And that was a location that we had to be in and people could meet us there. And I remember just having the thought, there's got to be a new paradigm. There's a way to approach this. So this is probably 2005 or so. I started running Google, like it was Yahoo ads and Google ads. And I realized that a lot of those leads didn't, that was for the investment firm. We didn't need to meet with people. And so we started investing outside of the state that we lived in. And I said, okay, that's great. And I really saw the potential of the internet and what that could be. And I knew I wanted to start another company that would not lock me down. And so every other company after that has been virtual. And so I've been doing this for well over a decade. And I'm not going to say I won't do a location that has to be brick and mortar, but I won't be the one that has to be there. I may have a company like that, but I'm not going to be the one that is there.
Let's get into this in terms of building out the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Because technology is what allows you to be this way. It allows you to be the Gypsy King. It allows you to go spend several months a year at a time with your family in Mexico or in Hawaii or, you know, Southeast Asia, wherever you decide that you're going to make home for a number of months. How did you go about deciding the type of technology that you would use to be able to make sure that there was cohesive communication, processes and procedures were able to do that, there was great handoff within the company itself, and everybody had an understanding of what was next, what happened next, and how we were able to work together to make sure that the end customer was successful?
I love that question. I'm going to give credit where credit's due on a lot of this. Many of these pieces I learned from a guy named Ari Mizell. Mm-hmm. He's got a company called Less Doing. So you have to start and be very clear on what it is you're trying to accomplish, and then be very clear with the team and yourself, what are the emergencies that are going to happen in business? So for us, an emergency means that the bank account was hacked. That's pretty much it. There can be some other semi-emergencies, but normal day-to-day stuff should never be emergencies. And then you zoom out and it depends on the type of business you create. You can have a business where it's just yourself, or you can have a business with lots of different team members. You can get as complicated or as simple as you'd like, but there has to be a place where the team members or yourself knows what's happening and how things are moving along. So that's a project management tool. The one that we like is Trello. We have used everything out there. We've used like Airtable, and we've used Basecamp and Asana, you name it. We've used every single thing out there. I find that to be the best for us. So that needs to be a place where the entire team can communicate. And you have to build in redundancies and have that transparency in place so that if someone were to be removed from the company, so they get in an accident and they're gone the next day, everyone has to know what's going on. So that's first and foremost. Next, going in line with the emergency side of things, rarely should things be emergencies in the business. Yes, there's urgent stuff, but if you're communicating clearly, you have the expectations, how tasks are moving along, there's no need for phone calls. There's really not a need for lots of text messages or stuff like that. So you have to have a communication platforms. And so for us, we choose to use a tool called Voxer. It's like a walkie-talkie. And then we use Slack. And again, on all of our communication, like if I send one of our team members a message right now, it doesn't mean that they have to respond in 60 seconds. They could respond later today or tomorrow. That's totally fine.
Do you set an expectation of your messages need to be responded to within, say, 24 hours? Or is there a level of expectation when you send a message?
Depending on the team member. So within certain fields of operation, yes. And that's, I think, where it comes into the organization and orchestration of all of that. So I'm not involved with the operations. I was years ago, but I'm not anymore. But in operations, an operations director may have to go through and connect with someone on the team. And as they're working through, they may, you know, need to get information quicker, especially working with developers and others like that. But we make sure to set up clear rules of engagement before we hire. But that's in the onboarding process. And we don't have a lot of synchronous meetings, like where people have to jump on Zoom calls or things that are going to, you know, require a person's full attention. And so because of that, there's also that understanding of, hey, if it happens to be a team member in a non-technical or non-somewhat urgent, they getting back later in the day is fine. But saying like when it's all hands on and we're working through a new tech rollout or whatever that be, the operations may say, hey, we're going to be all hands on deck today. I'm going to throw in your messages and let's make sure we get through that.
So do you have a 911 level of communication? For me, it's text. If you really need to get in touch with me and you need to get in touch with me now, text me.
Yeah, it's text and phone call.
So there's a, oh my God, my phone is ringing. Something's wrong.
Yeah, it's never happened. And I hope that it never does. But yeah, we definitely have that. And the entire team knows that as well.
So it's setting those levels of expectation. I remember years ago sitting in on a board meeting with a guy by the name of Christian Cotticini. And Christian's attitude was, look, twice a year, I go away for 3 weeks. I bring my cell phone with me. That phone better not ring unless I need to get on a plane and come home. He says, I trust you as an organization. I trust you as people. Our expectations, our culture, our purpose are solid. You guys know what to do and you know how to do it. And he says, the only reason to pick up a phone and call me is if all of a sudden the plant burns down and I need to come home for whatever particular reason, i.e. the bank account gets hacked and I'm the only person that can deal with that.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of setting those expectations and also hiring people that you trust and giving them the tools to be able to be successful.
Absolutely. You mentioned people that you trust. I love our team. They're amazing. And we've got team members that have been with us for, you know, half a decade. I think I was talking with one of our guys and he's, oh, I remember like his work anniversary came up and it was like 5 or 6 years ago. And I'm like, man, that's, I can't believe that the time has gone that fast. So it's amazing.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about hiring people. Because if you're a CEO that's on the road and you've told me you're not involved in a lot of the day-to-day stuff, you're not involved in the tech stuff. You're more focused on the growing the business, the big picture type of stuff. Mm-hmm. How do you make sure that you are getting the right people hired and that the culture of the organization is perpetuated to make sure that when you're not around, everybody knows what the vision of the company is, what's expected of them, how you want your customers taken care of, and know that they're going to go out and do it day in and day out?
One is hiring the right people in the interview process, making sure that they have the right mindset. We're not going to hire anyone that is a victim. We're not going to hire anyone that's negative, anyone that's going to be difficult to work with. They simply just aren't a fit. The biggest piece is I have to give credit due where it is. And our director of operations, Jenna Redden, she's been just phenomenal. She handles our hiring. And I'll give you a great example of something recent. We have a person that does one of our PR members on the team. And she's our senior member. And she's actually transitioning out of the company. She ended up getting her dream job for a really large organization that she's had a headhunter like trying to get her in for years and years. And they finally reached out. And so she's going through that transition. And so we have had to hire additional people. Annie, who's on our team, went through and she helped through the interview process. And she did that with Jenna to make sure that they're a fit. And I think that's really important. One, because Annie had that PR experience beyond what both Jenna and I have. So she was able to sit on those interviews and give insights that we didn't have. And Jenna has the actual like community and like the way that we feel and the culture and put that in place. And then second, absolutely, we just won't tolerate anything that's going to cause problems or disruption. If someone's negative, we're going to address it. And that doesn't really happen. If someone makes excuses or they're not doing what they're supposed to, we're going to address it. And if they're not a fit, if they're toxic, we're just not going to tolerate it at all. And we're going to transition them out. And I think a thing that's really helpful is we're always trying to do what's very best for our team. And we work with this philosophy of we're always trying to replace people up. So my role is working on developing technology that will replace the humans that are inside the business so that they can then replace up to be doing something better. So if they happen to be in the weeds and the trenches on doing something now, and I've developed the technology, well, now let's help them so that they can level up. And that also increases their income. So it's a win-win on all sides.
So you're hiring people not only for a job, but you're hiring them with the potential that you're realizing that as the company grows, there's opportunity for them to grow within the company. Is that correct?
100%. Oh yeah, all the time.
How do you perpetuate that culture? You fully admit you as a group do not get together on a regular basis. You're not in the same room. You don't have the regular retreats. You don't have the coffee and the pizza or the team building exercises or those type of things. How do you maintain the culture as you grow as an organization? Because that's a challenge that most companies have. And the fact that because you are remote and you're in a different country a lot of the time, there people are not physically seeing you. So they don't have the idea to, you know, emulate what you're doing. How do you perpetuate your culture and your purpose within the company?
You know, I like the way that you're positioning that. And I'm actually taking the time to articulate why. I think it's because one of our core foundations and beliefs is freedom, autonomy. And that's the reason I created the business in this way. And frankly, that's the type of people that we work with. And so I'll back up. The culture also goes with the client side. So if anyone's toxic or it's a message that is totally out of alignment of how we operate as people, we're not going to work with them.
That's your client. You're talking about clients coming into the company.
On the client side, yeah. We just won't do it. But on the team side, freedom is the biggest. And so by having clarity at the very beginning, knowing that, hey, these are the emergencies, which, you know, really for the team members, none, and understanding how we communicate and each person having their own freedom and their ability to grow and to operate, I don't think the organizations, I think that oftentimes, and maybe it's just due to the nature of our organization, since we're not hundreds and hundreds of people, I don't think that it's necessary to have retreats, and I don't think it's necessary to play games and do all these other things, because at the end of the day, your life should not be your job or your work. You use that time in your work to hone in your craft, to do good work, to do hard work, to focus, to grow, but that shouldn't be your life. And I think that's where a lot of companies get messed up, is that they want to turn this fun ping pong culture, this coffee culture, and make it a person's life. And they justify that by, oh, it's going to be so fun at work. And because of that, you can grind it out for 12 or 14 hours a day. No, I just simply don't believe that. And it's been longstanding with our team. Unless there's something specific we're working on, we have the conversation, hey, you can do the work at 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock at night. We really don't care. You just have to meet the deadlines. And then make sure you communicate with us. So I think that's important. The other thing that is contrary to what is being said in the world today is there's no quotas or things that we're trying to do, without getting myself in trouble the way that I'm saying, to virtue signal. For us, it's not about where someone lives or what someone looks like or anything of that nature. We're hiring the best people, and we're hiring people that really want that freedom. And I think on large organizations, when they do virtue signal, or when they try and make it like, oh, the cool new family that you're going to join, you strip people's freedoms. And I think that's a disservice. And I never want to do that.
It's interesting because from what I'm hearing from you, it's an entrepreneurial or intrapreneurial spirit that you're trying to create. Giving people the freedom to sit there and say, okay, we need you to get this work done. We don't care if you do it on the beach. We don't care if you do it at 2 o'clock in the morning. We don't care if you do it on the weekend and take Wednesday, Thursday off, as long as it gets done in the time that the customer needs it done in terms of their expectations. We've set a set of expectations for our clients. Your shows will be ready in 2 weeks. From the minute you give us the stuff, it's going to be done in 2 weeks. And as long as those deadlines are met, it's up to your individual employees to make sure the work gets done and they're not impeding any of the other staff on your team.
Yeah, absolutely.
The word that comes to my mind is trust. Trust of you, trust of each other, trust of the clients trusting you that things are going to get done. How do you make sure that level of trust is maintained and grows within the company? Because that's what allows you to be the gypsy CEO. Mm-hmm.
From the team members, where it is doing what we say we're going to do. So that's the biggest thing for us. And that goes on with clients. And that's setting those expectations. Once you have that expectation of, hey, this is the due date and we're always going to deliver. Or it could be even with a team member, hey, I'm going to do X. You always have to do it. And so that is first and foremost where you have to be. The second is that clear communication. And there's different roles. A person running operations is going to be taking on more things or juggling more things than someone that is just working in one capacity in the business. And I think that's a really tough balance to not get spread too thin. And so when a person does get spread too thin, you sit there and say, okay, what's going on? Having clear communication, working through that is vitally important.
I rail against the 360, the yearly review, that formalized review process, because I just honestly don't think that it does a lot of good. How do you make sure that your employees know on a regular basis that they're ticking the boxes, that they're doing the right things, that they're meeting expectations, and that they're doing the things that needs to be done in order to be able to make sure that the customers are succeeding and the company is succeeding?
That goes into play when you hire someone with the expectations, laying that all out at the very beginning. So if someone's hourly, it's laying out at the very beginning, hey, here's how we do pay raises. They're going to be every 6 to 9 months, and it's going to be X of a pay raise. And in order for us to do that, it's going to look like your role and position will be this. And if we need to accelerate that, then you're probably going to be need to doing Y, like very clear. And then beyond that, it's looking at the team, and we do a few things that are probably different than most organizations. Like, we support the team members to grow. We'll offer to pay for them to go through Six Sigma training so they can get certified, or we'll find courses out there and they'll say, yeah, this is a really good course. I think it could help. And we'll go buy the course so they can have access to it. And there's other things, like, for example, our director of ops, she's just working miracles. And there's more that we can do to help her. So we've hired an executive assistant that will be helping her. And so it's proactively looking at things and giving them the support. All of our team members, if they have an idea of a project or if they need an assistant, they can go hire a virtual assistant or anyone to go and support them, or any tool out there that helps, we'll go pay for it because we want them to be happier. And it's going to increase our productivity as a company, and it's going to increase the profit that we make.
That's awesome. We're getting to the end of this, but I want to ask you two questions before I let you go.
Sure.
The first question is, what do you know now that you didn't know when you started this company that would made it so much easier for you to build the company remotely and be as successful as you are?
Hiring the right people in the right positions is the most important thing. When we really grew is when we had a good operations director, and that was several years ago. And that caused us to have a growth bump. And then when we hired a sales team, that caused us to have a growth bump. And essentially, the less that I do, the more the company makes, because I don't get in the weeds. I can get really hyper-focused in a good way, and I can get very distracted in a bad way. And so I find it best for me to say, hey, this is an assumption that I have. I think we should run with this. And then we see if it's worth it. And if it is, that's great. And if it's not, that's wonderful. But I myself should not be running operations. It's probably that's like detrimental to the company.
It's like me running accounting. I'm fine looking at the GLs. I can read the spreadsheets. I can do all that kind of stuff. but you don't want me preparing them and actually getting this stuff ready for the tax man. It's just not a good use of my time. I totally get that.
Yeah.
With that being said, here's the last question. And I ask this of every single person as they leave my show.
Okay.
When you leave a meeting and you get in your car, you drive away, or you go and sit on a beach with a Mai Tai or whatever you're going to do, what's the one thing you want people to be thinking about you and Podkick when you're not in the room?
Oh, that we are saving people's time and giving them more autonomy. That truly is the reason for the things that we do. Freedom is that important to me. And I emphasize that for both the team members and for the clients that we work with. And we want to be very respectful of keeping our commitments. And we also want them to be respectful of the way that we work.
Spencer, it has been a great podcast. I love listening to you. I love the viewpoint and how you've built this company, and you inspire me, and I'm sure you inspire a lot of people who are going to listen to this, because there's a lot of gold in there, and it's going to allow CEOs to go out there and do the things that they should be doing and letting the team do what they should be doing and realizing where you add value and where other people add more value. So thank you for being such an amazing guest.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?